It's just constantly there, reading, waiting to see if it's there all day, 24/7. It never gets tired, doesn't get fatigued, doesn't have to take a nap or whatever. It's just in the background. They're literally having it running in the background all the time. Why is this important? It's because we know from this trial that radiologists, human physicians, will miss PE 15.6% of the time. That's a large number. But if you use AI in the background, that goes down to 3.8%. So think of how beneficial that could be to patients, how you could reduce morbidity and mortality. So I think you're going to find in the next year, as you order these scans, and I know I've ordered many CT scans for PE, and I'm sure everyone in this room has done many this year, it can really help on those misses. Similarly, it could detect pulmonary hypertension. And this in Japan, they actually, to do the trial, shockingly got 145 patients to get a Swan-Ganz catheter. We don't do Swan-Ganz catheters anymore. Ever. But they did it for the trial to quantify in a gold standard way the pulmonary hypertension. And then they had 260 controls. And then they trained it just from chest x-ray only to recognize pulmonary hypertension. The area under the curve was really high, 0.988, sensitivity 93%, specificity 98%, superior to doctors. So, you know, I can look at a chest x-ray. If I see those pulmonary arteries are big, I could probably tell you pulmonary hypertension, even though I'm not a radiologist, but not at this level. This is like even the most subtle ones that maybe the human eye couldn't detect, the AI is going to detect. So today we'll be talking about artificial intelligence and pulmonary critical care. So last time we did this session, it was cardiology. Next time will be gastroenterology. Right in the middle is pulmonary critical care. Interestingly, AI, especially for critical care, is going to be an amazing thing. And I'm going to show you some publications that just came out recently that are truly transformative, that will allow you to like save lives in an ICU setting that in a way that was never before possible. So hopefully you'll see how cool this is. So as you recall, my name is Mel Spiceman. I'm the president of American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine. In preparing this talk for you guys today, I did a PubMed search because I'm an evidence-based physician, and I found that there were a total of 5,000 articles on artificial intelligence and pulmonary medicine. Interestingly, prior to the year 2000, there were only 700. So we went from 700 to 5,000 in about 5 years. So like about 1,000 papers a year. So I hope you can appreciate that from the entire history of medicine up until 2000, there were only 700 articles. Now there's 5,000. So it gives you some idea of how exponential this is in terms of new data, new research. And it's very hard for any one physician to keep up with all of this stuff. So hopefully you'll find these presentations helpful in that regard. So I selected ones that will be relevant to actually helping you take care of a patient today. So we're going to start by talking about using artificial intelligence for chest imaging. So as you know, most artificial intelligence algorithms that exist today are for chest imaging. There are 1,000 FDA-approved AI algorithms right now that you could use today, 1,000. 75% of those are for imaging. 10% are for cardiology, for those of you that are interested in cardiology. So you could see how, at least up until today, the bulk of what's out there that we can purchase and use to care for a patient is in imaging. So that's going to be a a portion of today's talk. So why is it that we can read an x-ray with AI? It's something called computer vision. And I won't really go into a lot of detail. I'm just going to give you a quick how this became a reality. It was something called AlexNet. AlexNet was the original algorithm that allowed computers to read images. So this is a deep learning. It's called deep learning. So you know about machine learning. Deep learning is a subset of machine learning that stacks multiple layers of calculations to learn nonlinear, higher-dimensional patterns. So the kind that reads images is called CNN, convolutional neural network. I just want you to be familiar with these terms, because for you to understand and use these tools to help care for a patient, some definitions are useful. So this is a type of architecture for deep learning, which means that once a pattern is learned, it can then recognize it anywhere in an image. So all this happened in September 30th, 2012, and it was a competition. And the winner of the competition was, his name was Alex. He was being mentored by some of the people that won the Nobel Prize this year, actually. So that's how important this is, that this work actually is linked heavily to this one of this year's Nobel Prize winners. So for medical images, machine learning algorithms can simplify solutions to problems by considering new patterns within pixels that are not immediately apparent to the human eye. So this point is really critical. AI in 2025 outperforms a radiologist because it can see patterns within the pixels that a human eye will never be able to detect. So this was how it was done originally. This was the paper, or it was presented at a NeurIPS meeting in 2012, where they trained AI through a convolutional neural network to read and classify 1 million images. So let's kind of jump ahead then. So that was the original study that allowed us to read images. Then in 2018, physicians at Stanford used this same concept to read an x-ray. So we've only really been using AI to read an x-ray since about 2018. So not a super long time, about 7 years. And so this was one of the original studies done by Matthew Lundgren, who's a radiologist at Stanford. And a deep learning algorithm was used. So they fed in over 100,000. They fed in 112,000, 120 chest x-rays. And they trained it on 14 diseases. So basically, they created a way that computer vision could do the same thing that a radiologist can do, and even better. So these were the diseases they trained it on, 14 specific diseases that the computer was taught to recognize. Pneumothorax, consolidation, edema, emphysema, fibrosis, pleural thickening, hernia, atelectasis, cardiomegaly, effusion, infiltrate mass nodule, pneumonia. So these are the main things we look for when we look at a chest x-ray. So as I mentioned to you, as of October 2024, there's over 950 AI's medical devices that are approved by the FDA. 76% of those are in radiology. In 2025, the majority of radiology departments across the nation will be implementing AI into the clinical practice. Most hospitals and health systems now have created a position called Chief AI Officer, or CAIO, to guide on which of the 1,000 algorithms to purchase and deploy and use at their hospital. Many are competing products that do the same thing. Some are better than others. So most medical centers are hiring a physician to figure out which ones are best, which ones should we use at our hospital. There's a big push on this in the last 12 months. So you will see most radiology departments starting to use AI as part of their day-to-day, what they call workflow. I'm just going to quickly go over a few papers that are recent. This was in JAMA in 2023, October. It was called Generative Artificial Intelligence for Chest X-ray Interpretation in the Emergency Department. Now, why is this important? If you have rotated through the emergency room, which I think you either have or will at some point for a month, the X-ray is done, but often the emergency physician, who's not a radiologist, looks at it first before the report comes back, right? And if you're down there, you're probably the one looking at it first and then presenting to the attending, right? So can you imagine if you have instantly the ability to read it at the same level that the radiology report will show several hours later when it comes back to you? That's basically the idea. So this is a tool you can use. I know in my own experience, myself in the emergency room attending would look at a film and we try to give our best read, but it's not going to be at the level of a radiologist. This tool will be at the level of the radiologist or better. So, conclusion, in an emergency department, results suggest that AI models can produce similar accuracy and quality to a radiology report and will provide higher quality than a teleradiologist. So depending on what hour of the day is, often hospitals will send the images out somewhere on teleradiology. So this AI outperformed teleradiology. So the idea is implement it into your workflow. In other words, incorporate it into the emergency room. I would absolutely love to have this if I were an emergency physician. I know we're internal medicine, but just think of the possibilities, right? Here's another one on chest imaging. This was from JAMA Network Open in August of 2022. It was called Association of Artificial Intelligence with Chest X-ray Interpretation with Reader Performance and Efficiency. Basically, it was efficient. It was accurate. Deep learning, artificial intelligence engines improve performance and efficiency of reading X-rays. I was at the radiology conference, RSNA, here in Chicago just a month ago. And I will tell you that this was the buzz, is implementing this all across the nation. So this is important for you to recognize that when you send a patient for an X-ray in the year ahead, AI is going to be part of that. And when you leave here and go to other hospitals to practice, at that point, it's going to have been implemented. So I really think it's important as physicians that we should know about it and know the subtleties of it. And more importantly, the pluses and the downsides, you know. So this was, again, JAMA Network, August 2022, Association of Artificial Intelligence Aided Chest X-rays with Reader Performance and Efficiency. And this was done in Boston at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and Massachusetts General Hospital. And this session included reading with and without AI. So some were read with AI, some were read without AI. And then they did random crossover, and they did 4-week washout. So this was done on 497 X-rays. And they looked at pneumonia, nodules, pleural effusion, and pneumothorax. They found that AI-aided interpretation was improving reader performance and efficiency for lung X-rays. So I just gave you kind of the big picture showing you that it's as good as a radiologist or better. Now let's look at some specific diseases. And much of my talk, there's going to be case examples, real patients that I've cared for and how we would use AI today. This is a recent publication on tuberculosis. It was in New England Journal of Medicine AI. So New England Journal of Medicine has a separate digital one that I subscribe to that's only AI. This is the 1-year anniversary of that journal. And in September of this past year, just a few months ago, they published a really good paper on AI and tuberculosis. And what did they find? They've analyzed X-rays in 1,910 patients. 96% had a conclusive TB status. 649 were HIV positive. The TB AI sensitivity specificity was 87% and 70%. It had a really good p-value. It says at the high sensitivity threshold, TB AI was non-inferior to a radiologist with a p-value of less than 0.0. 001. So I was recently talking with your chief resident. He told me that you guys do a journal club every month. So you know that this is a really good p-value. I mean, this is a really good study. Sensitivity was 97%. Specificity was not as good, 79%. But what was the conclusion of this recent paper is that you can use AI to look at a chest x-ray and diagnose TB, and it would not be inferior to a radiologist for active pulmonary TB, and is a good way to triage a population with high TB and HIV burden. Okay, I really like to teach using real case examples. So this is a good one. It's a 69-year-old man that you see today for shortness of breath. That shortness of breath has been present, not acutely, but for 7 months. You find that the respiratory rate is 25 and the SAT is 94%. You do a lung exam, there's Velcro-like crackles at both lung bases. Chest x-ray shows diffuse reticular infiltrates in both lower lung zones. So I want you to think about what's the diagnosis and what would be your next step in caring for this patient. The diagnosis is diffuse parenchymal lung disease. My lab group actually has just finished a paper on this topic of AI and interstitial lung disease. We've reviewed all the literature on this that's ever been published. We're about to release a review article on it, so I have a lot to share with you on this topic, but it's crucial to identify what type of interstitial lung disease a patient has because the prognosis and the treatment are very different, and that IPF, as you know, has a poor prognosis, but the other interstitial lung diseases are very treatable. So if we could use AI to decide whether it's interstitial pulmonary fibrosis or one of the 100 other treatable interstitial lung diseases, that would be very helpful. This is a really nice flow diagram from a paper that we're including in our review article called Recent Advances in Artificial Intelligence and Interstitial Lung Disease, Diagnostics, July 2023. It has the idiopathic category that I told you, but also autoimmune, exposure-related, sarcoidosis. I've been practicing medicine now and teaching students and residents for 30 years. I've had patients with every single one of these diseases that I personally have treated. And to have a tool like AI to help really define what it is without a lung biopsy is just truly spectacular. This is how it's done. This is a very nice diagram to just allow you to understand how it's done. So you would feed in chest x-ray images into this deep learning algorithm. And then those x-rays you're training the AI on, you would have several specialists tell you on the training data what the definitive answer was. Usually we would have some biopsy information knowing what it is. And then the AI could just look at images and know from the image without having a biopsy whether it's IPF or non-IPF, which we mentioned is critical for prognosis and treatment. So another, again, from this is from another paper called Artificial Intelligence Interstitial Lung Disease in Investigative Radiology in August 2023, shows you how you could feed in not only imaging data, but demographic data, clinical data, laboratory data. We call this multimodal. Like, to do this is like so awesome, to put in basically all the data that we look at as physicians to kind of decide what someone has. This multimodal approach, and train the AI model. And then once you've trained the model, you have to test it to see that it actually works. So you compare it to what's called ground truth. So if you haven't heard of this term, ground truth, it's used a lot now in AI. Ground truth would be several specialists, say in pulmonary medicine, that have years of experience will tell you, this is the diagnosis. We know, we have biopsy proven, this is what it is. That's the ground truth. Now you're comparing to whether the AI algorithm that you trained when you give it an unknown patient can tell you that just from the image. So this is really exciting for me, as you can tell by my enthusiasm, that now just by showing AI an image, it will know the path without biopsying a patient. It's such a big deal to send someone for a lung biopsy because it's not bronchoscopic ever. In these cases, it has to be more than bronchoscopic. Bronchoscopic is not definitive. You have to like cut them open, have a surgeon go in with a, take a piece of lung tissue. So it's a big deal. So to have, to show AI an image and know instantaneously what the path is, this is like truly a landmark thing in pulmonary medicine and will really help patients. I have so many patients where we wouldn't know what they have until they get their lung biopsy. And the bronchoscopic biopsy is never going to give an answer. So this is truly transformative. I just want you to recognize how cool this is. And this has been proven in hundreds of trials, which we're reviewing in our paper. And you'll be able to use it this year because most radiology departments are going to deploy this technology this year in 2025. So I've explained to you how it's done. I'm going to give you another case example. This is a famous person, but it's not a HIPAA violation because they're, like, his family has donated to create a center in his name, which I actually had a chance to meet some of his family members and to meet the physician in charge of the center. But there was a Chicago born and raised, very famous stand-up comedian that on x-ray had bilateral hilar abnormalities. What is your next step? Well, as you can imagine, when we see hilar adenopathy, it's sarcoidosis. But the point here is that artificial intelligence can be trained to diagnose sarcoidosis. And this was shown in December 2023 in this paper. They used the convolutional neural network that I told you about and computer vision, gave it 126 CT scans of patients with proven sarcoidosis, also fed in 96 CT scans of that were normal to train it. And just with those small numbers, was able to get an area under the curve to distinguish sarcoidosis of 97%, which is a fantastic number, as you know. So this deep learning model can distinguish sarcoidosis from other conditions. Now, pneumothorax is a good example to go over with you guys because it's really hard for a non-radiologist to see. Like if you sat, we talked about emergency room. If you're in the emergency room and you're looking at that film, it's going to be really hard for you if you're not a radiologist to know, unless it's a big pneumothorax. You may have a hard time deciding about that. But if you had AI to help you before it goes to the radiologist to read, you would know right away. And this is a life-threatening emergency, as you know. You could easily die from it. So in JAMA in 2022, they concluded that AI can detect pneumothorax with a sensitivity of 94.5% and a specificity of 95%. What about things like PE? Well, in September of 2024, just a few months ago, this trial trained a model on 4,795 chest CTs that have known to have PE. Then if you give it an unknown patient, like someone that you see today, and you have this algorithm running on every CAT scan that's done, it'll have a 93.9% sensitivity and 94.8% specificity. Really good. So to the point where radiology departments are now having the, using this algorithm, having it just, they call running in the background, meaning it's just running 24/7. If you order a CAT scan to rule out a PE, it's just constantly there reading, just waiting to see if it's there all day, 24/7. It never gets tired, doesn't get fatigued, doesn't have to take a nap or whatever. It's just in the background. They're literally having it running in the background all the time. Why is this important? It's because we know from this trial that radiologists, human physicians, will miss PE 15.6% of the time. That's a large number. But if you use AI In the background, that goes down to 3.8%. So think of how beneficial that could be to patients, how you could reduce morbidity and mortality. So I think you're going to find in the next year, as you order these scans, and I know I've ordered many CT scans for PE, and I'm sure everyone in this room has done many this year, it can really help on those misses. Similarly, it could detect pulmonary hypertension. And this in Japan, they actually, to do the trial, shockingly got 145 patients to get a Swan-Ganz catheter. We don't do Swan-Ganz catheters anymore, ever. But they did it for the trial to quantify in a gold standard way the pulmonary hypertension. And then they had 260 controls. And then they trained it just from chest x-ray only to recognize pulmonary hypertension. The area under the curve was really high, 0.988, sensitivity 93%, specificity 98%, superior to doctors. So, you know, I can look at a chest x-ray. If I see those pulmonary arteries are big, I could probably tell you pulmonary hypertension, even though I'm not a radiologist, but not at this level. This is like even the most subtle ones that maybe the human eye couldn't detect, AI is going to detect. So this was February of last year. So let's give another case, because I think cases are a good way to teach by example. So this is a 63-year-old patient that has a pulmonary nodule. It was first seen 6 months ago. At that time, the CAT scan showed an 8-millimeter nodule in the left upper lobe. The patient had a 20-year history of smoking but stopped 6 months ago. What would be your next step? This is something that's a big dilemma for us when we have these small incidental pulmonary nodules. And eventually, again, you're going to need to do some type of a biopsy, which is a big deal for the patient. It's not like a simple bronch kind of a thing. It's like often the surgeon has to take out the nodule. Now with AI, we can know whether it's cancer or not without having to put the patient through cutting open the chest and removing the nodule. So this is really going to be a meaningful benefit to patients. There's a lot of work all across the world on this whole notion of pulmonary nodules and lung cancer and using AI as a solution to sorting this out. So in this paper, which was a European Journal of Cancer, AI outperformed the radiologist as a first reader for a lung cancer screening program. So I'm going to go back to that again. AI outperformed the radiologist. Not non-inferior, outperformed. Important. Not only that, it could tell from training, just by looking at the image, benign or malignant, what's the prognosis, what's the likelihood they'll be alive and mortality in the future. So diagnosis, prognosis, benign or malignant, just from an image. That's where we are at now in 2025. I find this to be really exciting. Hopefully, I'm instilling that excitement in you guys. I'm trying really hard. All right, let's look at another real case. I see this is a typical patient I see almost every week. Patient is seen in the office, or it could be in the hospital, because you guys do a lot in the hospital, with increased daytime sleepiness. On physical exam, the oxygen saturation is 94%. BMI is 44, so he's morbidly obese, not just obese, morbidly obese, which is unfortunately very common right now. It's a major health issue in the U.S. Blood pressure, 162 over 95. That's like every patient we see every day, right? Unfortunately, because of the obesity. Heart sounds are fine. Lung sounds are fine. The remainder of the exam is normal. But what would be your next step? Smartwatch. You weren't expecting that, right? So interestingly, just a few months ago, Apple updated its smartwatch to now have an algorithm that can detect sleep apnea. And if you were here for my cardiology talk, which I know you guys were, And we talked about using the smartwatch for AFib. Since that talk, Apple released now the algorithm or the app for sleep apnea. And when they did the release, the day they did the release to the world, the CEO of Apple stressed that another cool feature of our new watch is you can use it to screen for sleep apnea. So because obesity is so common in this country, sleep apnea goes hand in hand. So most of the hypertension that we see and diabetes that we see, that's what we see on every one of our patients, is because of the obesity. And there's, if we can control the obesity, get that better, the blood pressure would go away, the diabetes would go away, the sleep apnea would go away. But so in terms of using AI for this, right now we can use it as a screening tool. How does it work? Well, on September 9th, 2024, the Apple 10 Watch release announced that it can detect sleep apnea with an FDA-approved AI algorithm as a medical device. Aside from screening with the smartwatch, and if you remember my past talk, 45% of Americans now have a smartwatch on their wrist. So at least half of your patients, you could do the screening of sleep apnea if you wanted to. But let's say you screen positive, and you're going to do the next thing, like you do a sleep test. What about reading the sleep test? Because I don't know what your experience is, but my experience is from the time the test is done to the time is read by a doctor, there can be some delay. But they did this study where they used ChatGPT to read the sleep study. This was published in October 2024. They compared a board-certified sleep physician, which some of you might become. It's actually a good thing to do, versus ChatGPT-4. There was a 97% concordance rate. Conclusion, our results provide evidence for AI-assisted automation of the sleep study. So basically, you could use ChatGPT-4 today to read the sleep study instead of the sleep doctor. All right, so that's a taste of pulmonary. But it's much more exciting and impactful in critical care. Why? Because who dies under your care in the hospital? The ones that end up in the ICU, right? Everybody else, they're going to be okay. So the idea here is, can we use AI? And of course, the answer is yes, we can. Can we use AI in the emergency room in that first hour that the patient's there, put in their history, their exam, their labs, their x-rays, put all that in the first hour that they're in an emergency room, and know this person is going to crash and not be alive tomorrow. I have to put them in the ICU and be super aggressive. That's where we're at right now. So I'm going to show you that for ARDS, for sepsis. This is where AI is going to save the most lives worldwide, is in critical care medicine. So, and these papers just came out, and they're really good, and they prove that these FDA-approved algorithms, if we use them right now, today, you will save like a third of all patients that could crash while you're caring for them this month. You could save them if you use AI tools. So hopefully that's piquing your interest. I was amazed by this. Okay, so let's just talk about all comers. We don't know why they're going to have mortality 24 hours from now. They just walk into the emergency room. All comers, forget about what their diagnosis is. How can we have an early warning as to someone needing to go to an ICU? So this was published in JAMA in 2024, just recently in October. And 1 week ago, the editor of JAMA AI interviewed Dana Edelson, who published this. So this is a really hot thing. If you want to listen to a really good podcast, I would recommend go on your podcast, search for JAMA AI, which has just been relatively new. JAMA AI has just been for a few months now. Find the most recent interview, the podcast, with Dana Edelson. This is really an important paper. Like if I were telling, Omar what to do for journal club, I'd be like, do this one. This is like, I would definitely do this at journal club. This is phenomenal. So what was the question? How do hospital early warning scores compare? What's really exciting about this trial is it's truly a randomized trial, evidence-based medicine, and it compares six different prediction tools for who's going to crash and burn. So the total number of patients in this study was 362,926. So that's a good number of patients. They looked at six different prediction tools. Some had AI embedded in them, some did not. The machine learning model that did the best was called ECART V5. It had the best area under the receiver operator curve. It had the highest positive predictive value for both moderate and high risk. The National Early Warning Score, which is non-AI, was second best. But here's the part that's concerning to me, and hopefully you'll recognize why. The EPIC one, EPIC Deterioration Index, was the worst. Keep in mind, many of the hospitals in America use EPIC, right? When I was walking into the lecture hall, I passed a room outside this door, big sign that says EPIC. So we have, just like we decide what drug to give, should we give, you know, an ACE inhibitor? Should we give an ARB with an alprazolam inhibitor? We decide which has the best outcome for the patient. Well, in the same way, we need to pick an AI algorithm that has the best results, not the worst results. So I hope you can appreciate where I'm going with this. Evidence-based medicine, we have choices as physicians as to what AI tool we want to use. Pick a good one, not a bad one. They're not all the same. This is a really important paper. So, early warning decision support tool to identify clinical deterioration. They're widely used, these support tools. There's, until now, no comparative evidence. So they compared three proprietary AI ones with three publicly available simple ones. This was done on patients admitted to hospitals between March of 2019 and November of 2023. The outcomes were defined as transfer from the floor to the ICU. That's one outcome. Did they transfer from the floor or the ICU? Like if we can predict that in the first hour that the ER, they would put them in the ICU right away, right? Watch them. Or the other thing they looked at is, did they die in the first 24 hours? We can prevent that if we use the right tool. That's my message. So of these 362,000 patients, ECART had the highest area under the curve of the six choices. On to another case. This is a case that you've seen hundreds of times. Maybe not in such a young person, but 36-year-old woman is intubated following a motor vehicle accident. Physical exam at the time you see them, temperature's 100.4, blood pressure's 100 over 65, heart rate is 100, respiratory rate is 26. So they're febrile, they're hypotensive, they're almost tachycardic, their respiratory rate is high, they're tachypneic, their SAT is down. The FiO2 is 50%. If you've rotated in the ICU, which I know you have, you've had many patients like this every single day. EKG shows sinus tach. Well, most of the people we round on the ICU are in sinus tach. Chest x-ray, bilateral infiltrates, very common. What is this diagnosis? ARDS. 10% of all patients in the ICU have ARDS. Mortality rate is 40%. Now, here's the part that's concerning and true. Clinicians tend to not follow the guidelines on the management of ARDS. What we know from studies is there's a huge practice variation. And even though the professional societies have very detailed guidelines, we don't follow them. But what if we used AI as a tool? We could improve the care. So I'm really big into this notion of having AI help us adhere to every kind of guideline, whether it's heart failure or AFib or MI or ARDS or sepsis. Because these guidelines are 120 pages long. It's a lot of things to keep track of. So I feel like it would be an amazing tool to use AI to help us ensure that for all these complex patients, we're following each guideline to the letter. So here's a review article on ARDS, and we are actually about to publish a newer one, but this was published not too long ago, and they looked at 52 studies on ARDS patients where we can use artificial intelligence. Now, here's something interesting. Of the 52 studies on using AI for ARDS, there were 49 different algorithms. So almost every study used a different algorithm to apply to AI patients. How do we know of these 50 algorithms which one we should use? They're not all the same. Well, here's a pie chart showing what the algorithms do. Some diagnose ARDS, some predict the development of ARDS, some define the severity and subtypes, some look at mortality, some look at management, prognosis, modeling. But I really like this diagram that's from the review article, the systematic one, because it shows you in a really nice way the different types of AI that you could use for ARDS, for example. And you may have heard these terms, but I almost hope that you haven't, so that I teach you something today that you don't know, that you can walk out of the room and say, I learned something I didn't know. And so this would be the part where I want you to pay attention, because you're really going to learn something you don't know. So this diagram shows three types of AI algorithms that have been used as machine learning for ARDS. So one is called Random Forest. This is a machine learning algorithm that builds multiple decision trees, combining their predictions to reduce overfitting, which overfitting is a term that means the AI performed well when you trained it, but poorly on a new patient or unseen data. Each tree is trained on a random subset of the data, and it can a good example, because you're like, well, what's an example, would be, can predict if a lung tumor is benign or malignant, or whether that patient, you know, what their mortality or survival will be. So that's an example of a random forest algorithm. So it shows you on this diagram what percent of these 50 studies were random forest. The diagram also shows what percent were logistic regression. Logistic regression is a machine learning algorithm that is binary. It's either yes or no. So an example we showed you earlier, like either they have IPF or they don't have IPF. That's binary. That's this or that. Okay, and that estimates the probability using a linear regression. But the type of algorithm that worked the best for the ARDS, and that you should pick that one if you're going to deploy one in your care of a patient in the ICU, is called gradient boosting. You're like, what's gradient boosting? Well, first of all, it was the best one in this paper of analyzing 50 different algorithms. It builds a decision tree, but each tree corrects the errors of its predecessors. It's used to predict disease outcome. For example, an example would be survival in pulmonary hypertension. Random forest, on the other hand, builds decision trees in parallel, and the final prediction is made by averaging, whereas gradient boosting, each tree corrects the error of the previous one and is more accurate than random forest. So what's the takeaway of over 50 algorithms for AI and ARDS is that machine learning for ARDS can be used to diagnose it, to risk assess, to predict mortality, to help with prognosis. One final case for today, and I've seen this case thousands of times in my practice, and you have too, actually. It's an 84-year-old nursing home resident with a fever and confusion. Their temperature is 102.3. Their blood pressure is 90 over 62. Their respiratory rate is 28. Their heart rate is 116. The patient is given a bolus of normal saline. What is your next step? Well, I'm sure you recognize that this is septic shock. That I know you guys can recognize. But how can we use AI to help? Why this is important is that sepsis is a major cause of death. Like if we had to pick one disease to solve today where we would save the most lives right now today, it would be sepsis. There, in it says worldwide, this is a New England Journal article that was just published. I would recommend you read it. It's a review article just published recently. This article was updated December 5th, 2024. Fantastic review article on sepsis. If you get a chance, look at it. But it says that there's 48.9 million cases of sepsis with 11 million deaths annually. And here's the important part. In the United States, more than one third of in-hospital deaths are due to sepsis. So one in every three patients that might die under your care during your time at this hospital will die of sepsis. So this is probably the most important thing to tackle with AI. And we've done it. So in the United States, there's a cost of $38 billion. Sepsis is the most common cause of in-hospital death and the most expensive cause of hospitalization. Something I didn't know is it comes from the Greek word sepo, which means I rot. So it's been the cause of death for millennia. So again, just recently, just a few weeks ago, in New England Journal of Medicine, AI, on November 27th, they published a sepsis algorithm that the FDA has approved for you and I to use. Like we could use it today, right now, to save lives, and we should. So let's talk about the study that looked at this FDA algorithm, software to identify patients at risk of sepsis. It was a prospective trial, which is great. It enrolled adult patients over the age of 18, because we're internal medicine. You gotta be over 18 or we don't see you, right? Blood cultures were ordered. They had five different institutions. It was done from 2017 to 2022. The participants were divided into an algorithm cohort, 2,366, and then an internal validation cohort, 393, and an external validation cohort, 698. The primary endpoint was sepsis present as defined by sepsis 3 within 24 hours of test initiation. The secondary endpoints were length of hospital stay, ICU admission in 24 hours, mechanical ventilation, vasopressor use, and mortality. So great endpoints. What were the results, you asked, right? So the name of this algorithm is sepsis immunoscore. It had a high accuracy, an area under the curve of 0.85. Scores were categorizing the patients into four groups, a low risk, a medium risk, a high risk, and a very high risk. So these risk categories using the tool predicted in-hospital mortality. If you were low risk, you were 0.0 mortality. If you're medium, 1.9% mortality. If you're high, 8.7, and very high, 18.2. Similar trends were observed for other metrics, such as length of stay, ICU utilization, mechanical ventilation, vasopressor use. What was the conclusion of this sepsis study for this AI algorithm? That this sepsis immunoscore demonstrated a high accuracy to identify and predict sepsis and critical illness. It could enable a prompt identification of patients at high risk for sepsis, including adverse outcomes, improving their clinical decision-making. So this whole idea of a clinical decision support tool, this is really key. So I end on the high note because these last few things I showed you are like gonna save millions of lives worldwide. They're FDA approved Hospitals will be deploying them in 2025. You will be using them and you will be making a difference. I think it's important that when we talk about using AI, we think about how are we making a difference in the patients we care for today. So I'm hoping that by teaching you and others, I'm currently teaching this at 5 different internal medicine residency programs every month here in Chicago. I'm hoping that if I teach you guys the future of medicine, how to do this now, that we together can save millions of lives worldwide. And my hope is that the students and interns that you then mentor, you will share this information and that we really can make a difference using AI for good. So if you liked what you heard today, if this excites you, you want to do research or you want to get involved with our not-for-profit organization, you can email me at mspeismanmd@gmail.com, mspeismanmd@gmail.com. Many people in the program here already work in our lab groups, such as cardiology or pulmonary, and are writing papers with our virtual teams. We are going to be having a national conference similar to the American College of Physicians conference. It'll be held here in Chicago, and you guys are welcome to come. It's going to be Saturday, September 20th at McCormick Place. We will have world-renowned professors teaching the latest publications like I did today on AI and medicine. From today until September, there's going to be thousands of new things that come out. If you want to be updated on those thousands of new things and how to use them to help care for a patient, come to McCormick Place to our conference. It's on a Saturday. I did that intentionally so that you could come. It's not during a typical day. So hopefully some of you are off and might be interested in joining. And we'll be covering all the different specialties within medicine during that conference and doing it in an evidence-based way, like we did here today at the talk. So you know how to reach me. You can go to our website, www.americancollegeofaim.org, and become a member. If you're a student, a resident, or a fellow, it's free. And there's a lot of benefits to membership.
If you enjoyed what you heard here today, consider becoming a member of our professional society by going to www.americancollegeaim.org and click join. Also, don't forget to save the dates. September 19th and 20th, 2025, we'll be having our first ever scientific session at McCormick Place right here in Chicago. Go to our website to register to attend the conference. We hope to see you all live in Chicago, and we look forward to having you tune in to our next podcast on Melvin Monday here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.